very much. We'll be getting underway in a few moments.
You waited for me.
You held on the whole boat.
Oliver Cromwell.
Should be called Mississippi or something.
Yeah.
Vicky.
Well, it'll be a couple of minutes and Elgar's coming through. We'll be boarding up on soon.
Elgar's coming through? We had a teacher called Miss Elgar. But she's died now.
If you drop something, it'll go in the water.
I know. Well, she was very old, Dad.
What?
Miss Elgar.
Isn't it Maddie? Is it Maddie in charge now?
In charge of what? Oh, Mardy Smith.
Mardy Smith. That's the one that's being interviewed on the
program. Oh, yeah.
What was she when you were there?
By the time I left, she was vice principal.
Here it comes. Edwin Elgar is another.
It's not making the right sort of noise, is it? Oh,
no. What, Elgar?
Hmm.
It should be coming in with lots of pomp and circumstance.
Yeah, it should.
Pomp. Yeah.
Oh, stink.
It does, doesn't it? Was that you, Pete?
No, it was you.
You sure?
Oh, stink.
Well, you better tell Mum and Dad that you're
Edward.
Oh,
do
you want
to tell your Mum and Dad?
Yeah.
You've got a lot of secrets.
Robert is now booing, by the way.
Secrets are very unhealthy.
No, we're telling you.
Yeah, it doesn't mean what you're going to put on, though.
What?
What's the difference between recording and making it public?
Yeah. Well, Robert's booing.
I'm booing directly, so...
It's live. Everything.
Well, it's not quite live, but like it's uneditable.
Oh.
Oh.
That means you mustn't say that Fiona started it.
Which it's I right. haven't.
It's alright, the audio people are used to it.
Oh. Oh. Aren't you horrible?
Yes!
Horrible, Robert.
Horrible, horrible, horrible. I practice my horribleness.
Your horribility.
No, we look as if we're going because we're looking at the one that's coming in, but in fact, we're still
standing. It's like when you're on a train.
And you think you're going and you're not. Relative to the others.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there is an audio equivalent to that. I suppose it could be. If you hear this thing, I close my eyes and it sounds like it's drifting past.
I don't know how to open the bridge.
Oh, is the bridge open?
No, it's closed again.
Oh, right.
Let's just let that one through.
I really hoped it would go up when I was looking at it yesterday. I quite like lifting bridges
nice,
and things.
Yeah.
Oh, they're letting some passengers get across the
road. Yeah.
Oh, and then they'll lift it again, presumably.
Yeah,
is that the bridge you saw yesterday?
It was, I think so, yeah.
I'm going to do a boo too now.
I went and saw something I shouldn't have done.
What was that?
The man said to go to the toilet and he said, are you on the trip or the boat? I said the boat. He said, I'll go up there, third floor.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like a private back entrance where the staff go. And I couldn't get into the third floor.
Oh, there you are. So I thought, oh, this is touching me.
Just a couple of footnotes to the safety message. The duty-free locker will be open after we're 3 miles off the coast. Please don't hold your breaths. Sunbathing facilities are available on the fore and aft decks. And a polite reminder to all parents, any unattended children will be removed and eaten.
And eaten.
Eaten.
And eaten, removed and eaten.
Oh, not go to eating.
No, I thought that first, yeah.
Oh, well, that's a bit better.
It's a new idea.
I think the bridge will be drawn up. Mm. At the moment it's flashing.
We're turning round.
Well, before we make our way down the canal, I've got to make a turn in the basin in front. While I'm doing this, it'll give you a good opportunity to view these fine old Victorian warehouses. These warehouses are actually constructed for the storage of grain.
He's so impressed.
Being an important destination for grain. these warehouses before being transshipped on marabouts and barges through the lock in front of us and up the River Severn to Worcester and Starport. From here, it would gain access to over 2,500 miles of inland waterways. Most of this grain was used to feed the growing towns and cities of the Midlands throughout the Industrial Revolution. Well, as this is a ship canal, I'm obliged to give sound signals. Those on the foredeck may wish to put their fingers in their ears. Oh. Here we go.
Turning to board.
Show off.
That was cool.
Your turn, Fiona.
So, yeah, it was a good echo, wasn't it?
It was.
A restaurant called On Toast.
On Toast?
Oh, I'm getting fish splash flush now.
Oh, lovely.
You're not the only one. If I just hide in front of you.
No.
It's lovely, lovely.
Oh, I do like to be. Oh, they're sending the alarm on the bridge again.
What's this boat called?
I don't know. I'll come back, wasn't it?
Queen Boadicea.
Buried underneath platform one at King's Cross, I think.
Do you know what she did there, Fiona?
No, I've forgotten.
She rode chariots.
Oh.
She fought the Romans.
Oh, there's an old sailing boat. Reef.
Roof?
Yep, it's called Roof.
As all good ships should be.
Oh look, the drawbridge is going up.
So if it's called Roof, does it go, oh no?
Struth. Struth is Roof.
Well,
many of the vessels are reaching Gloucester with their grain. We're in need of repair. Quite early on, two dry docks were constructed, which are on our right-hand side. These dry docks are still in use today, though nowadays operated by a master Danish shipwright, Mr. Tommy Nielsen.
It's a dry dock.
Tommy specialises in the repair and maintenance of all wooden sailing vessels, and as a result, we get quite a number of tall ships in Gloucester. To receive the attention of Tommy and his team. In Tommy's large dock at present, we have the bark Cascalot, one of the old square sail vessels, in for a major refit. And outside the Massey Shore, this is the old PLA fire tender from Port of London.
Now,
as we move down the basin on our left-hand side, we'll be passing the barge arm, specially constructed area within the docks where narrow boats were loaded. Today, the barge arm provides space for the floating exhibit to the Waterways Museum. There at present, we have the number 5 Sabrina Dunbarge, our collection of narrowboats, but also the number 4 steam dredger. This old steam dredger was built in Holland in 1925, used on the waterways through to the early 80s, and it's still kept in working order today. Also, on our left, just prior to the bridge, the small river tug Severn Progress. This little vessel was built in Bristol by Charles Hill in 1931. Used on the waterways through to the end of commercial traffic and capable of towing up to 3 of the Sabrina boats over the entire waterway between Avonmouth and Starport. Well, through Lantany Bridge, out onto the canal. And the first thing you'll notice on leaving the docks is that the architectural style of the warehouses has now changed. These warehouses outside of the basin are known as pillar warehouses, and they're named for obvious reasons. They came about due to a compromise that was reached between the canal company and the warehouse owners. The warehouse owners wished to load and unload vessels directly from their upper storage facilities. The canal company needed to keep access on the quayside. Well, the compromise was reached and technology came to the rescue in the fall into our stout cast iron Victorian columns, which support the upper floors.
This guy's
I know.
Funny.
This rather large red brick warehouse to your left front is Downing's Malt House. It's certainly my favourite warehouse on the canal, as this was the centre of the brewing industry.
Oh, excellent.
On the floors in that warehouse, the company could produce anything up to 300 tonnes of malted barley a week. This malted barley would eventually be shoveled down those rusting diagonal chutes into a waiting narrow boat for the journey up the river and canals to supply the breweries
around
the west.
15 metres high, these pillars. They're behind us now. I don't think you see the pillars. There's
and the last mill, this stretch of the canal is Foster's Canadian
okay.
Oil Mill. This
that
company
yeah,
specialises
okay.
in the extraction of oil from seeds, predominantly linseed and cottonseed. Linseed came in from the Black Sea region, cottonseed in from Egypt. In that mill, the seeds were crushed, the oil extracted, the residue of the process then turned into cattle cake. But from this point on the canal down beyond Hempstead Bridge, the type of cargoes being handled by Gloucester differs.
Yeah,
I don't know, I think... We're about to enter an area which specialised in the importation of timber. Hard to believe that
you're
at one time...
You're going to be talking like this for the rest of the day.
Second timber port. All the industries down the left-hand
side quite like it.
Had their origins in either handling or processing this incoming timber.
Yeah.
Once through the new bridge on the left, we'll be passing the steel... And not too many years ago, this was actually the home of the largest employer for a large wagon and carriage works. For over 100 years, the large factory stood on that site, producing rolling stock, not only for the UK rail companies, but also for many of our colonial railways. At their height, they employed over 2,500 personnel, screaming. To build Queen Victoria's Diamond Jubilee Royal Train. The company last held that site through the latter days of the 60s, eventually closing mainly as a result of Dr. Beeching's rail cuts.
Yeah.
Hooray for Beeching.
No.
No?
No.
Oh, sorry.
Unhooray.
Unhooray.
Yes.
This is quite a wide canal.
Well, in a moment or so on the right-hand side, we'll be passing the entrance to Monk Meadow Dock. Now, this dock, a later addition to the canal, was built to help handle the ever-increasing amounts of timber coming into Gloucester. By the 1920s, though, it had been taken over by the Royal Company.
Yeah.
We used to use rather large coastal tankers in there, disgorging their cargoes of fuel and oil into the tank fields, or transferring it to smaller vessels for the onward journey to the factories and refineries around Worcester. And this trade continued through to the early 80s, finally ceased after the construction of a pipeline between the Midlands and the refineries on the coast.
Refineries on the coast.
It's very funny.
The refineries.
On the coast.
We're returning to our tale of timber. At one time there was so much timber coming into Worcester, the captains, unwilling to wait their turn for their vessels to be unloaded, took to the habit of dumping the logs straight in the canal. This became such a hazard to navigation that the canal company insisted timber merchants dig large side ponds. This overgrown wooded area to your right was once the largest timber pond on the canal, covering an area around that of 3 football pitches and dug to a depth of nearly 4 foot. Many thousands of tons of timber would be stored floating in this pond. And when required, the logs would be formed into rafts. The rafts then manhandled and poled out through a small entrance at the end of these trees and over to the timber yards on the left-hand side. Here they were extracted from the canal with the use of gantry cranes.
Gantry cranes!
He sounds really excited about that.
Now, for those of you not from Gloucester, you may be wondering why a city so far inland requires a port. You may be surprised to learn that Gloucester has been a port since Roman times and received its first port charter from Queen Elizabeth I. But Gloucester is located on the River Severn. Now, the River Severn between Bristol and here is extremely hazardous. At low tide, there's very little water and numerous sandbars. We have the second highest tidal range in the world and also a tidal phenomenon known as the Sevenborn. This is a tidal surge that sweeps up the channel at the start of each tide. Well, in the days before the canaling could take anything up to 2 weeks for a small vessel to make this arduous journey. And at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, the city fathers didn't take long to realise that unless they improved access, Gloucester would be bypassed by the growing prosperity happening to the north. They applied to Parliament for a charter to dig this canal in 1793. And this was granted, a company formed, and work commenced the following year. Unfortunately, though, the original canal company went bankrupt after 5 years, having only completed 5 miles of canal. The time coincided with the outbreak of the Napoleonic Wars, and most of the navvies employed on digging the canal were conscripted into the army or the navy. Well, it wasn't until 1815, and after the Battle of Waterloo, that the government turned its attention back to the completion of the canal. The government of the day was in a bit of a dilemma. Thousands of men were being deployed from the forces, and these men were roaming the countryside in large bands looking for employment. The government, fearful of the spectre of revolution, started job creation schemes to alleviate this, and the canal was chosen as one such scheme due to the number of men it would employ. It was placed under the control of an eminent British civil engineer, Sir Thomas Telford, who recommenced work on the project in 1817. Well, it took Telford a further 10 years to complete. The canal eventually opening in April 1827. And on its completion, this was the longest and deepest ship canal in the world. 16 miles long, dug to a depth of 16 foot, and capable of carrying the largest merchant vessels of its time. The docks in Gloucester became an immediate success. In the first years of operation, customs annually recorded cargo levels in excess of 300,000 tons. There were vast quantities of grain to feed the growing populations of the Midlands, and large amounts of timber from the Baltic states and Archangel in Russia. A healthy trade in wine and spirits centred on the city of Worcester, and raw products for the tin smashing industries, operating from Cornwall, lead from the Mendip Hills, and iron ore and coal from the Forest of Dean. But Gloucester proved unpopular with shipowners and captains alike. There were very few export cargoes, and this meant most vessels either left empty or in ballast. One of the few exceptions to this rule was that of salt. Now, salt being mined in the Stoke Prior Droitwich area was transported on the river and canals in what were known as winch boats. Here it's stored in warehouses along the canal side, and when enough accumulated, loaded into the hold of a lucky outgoing ship. In those times, salt was a very important commodity, one of the few ways to preserve meats prior to the days of refrigeration. And most of Gloucester's salt was actually destined for Ireland, in those times the centre of the meat packing industries.
Woo! That's windy.
It's just how fast we're going. Flying along.
There's a life boy behind me.
Is there?
A life girl, it's only a life boy.
It's only a life boy. Yeah, well, it's only boys that have to be saved, you see.
Oh, I see.
Gentlemen and men first.
There's some rowing boats, aren't there?
Can I have my jumper?
It's on the floor in front of you.
Not right this second.
Why?
Because it might blow away.
By your left foot.
I've got it. Sainsbury's because we were getting thirsty.
There's
bit.
People rowing.
Well, hold that. There is meant to be stuff sticking out, so I can
leave.
Well, in a moment or so, we'll be passing the last two surviving salt warehouses on the canal. Both on the left, the first one here with an open front and one closer to the bridge with a blue corrugated roof. Now, if you look at the walls, you can still see the salt crystals that leach through. And talking of bridges, this one in front is Hempstead Bridge. It actually marks the official end of Gloucester Docks. This bridge is typical of many on the canal, still manually operated by a member of staff of the newly formed CRT, the Canal and Rivers Trust, which was formerly British Waterways.
Germany, you got a nice
Now, as the years passed by, merchant vessels became larger, and there came a point when the largest could no longer reach Gloucester. To overcome this, the company built a second dock in Sharpness. Here, the larger vessels were unloaded, their cargoes placed in barges. The barges then towed up the Canal and River with the use of steam tugs. In this period, quite a number of leisure activities sprang up along the canal. Once through the bridge on our left, we'll shortly be passing Gloucester Rowing Club. Now, Gloucester Rowing Club, still a thriving club today, is the sixth oldest rowing club in the country. It traces history back to 1843, the first recorded race between the men of Gloucester and the men of Tewkesbury. And would you believe it?
No.
At one time, there were even pleasure gardens in Sharpness. Oh. It would be a Sunday treat for the accordion folks of Gloucester to board the steam packet, travel down the canal to Sharpness, here to have afternoon tea while taking in the bracing estuary air. At a great expense to myself, I laid on some of this bracing estuary air for you folks this afternoon. Well, these pleasure gardens lasted in Sharpness through to 1939, when the government, fearful of air attack, transferred the Merchant Navy training ship, Vindicatrix, from its berth in the Pool of London to the docks in Sharpness. Well, the pleasure gardens were closed down to provide space for the ship's shore establishment. And you try saying that after you've had a couple of baby shams. Well, the school lasted in Sharpness through to the mid-60s, when eventually Vindicatrix was scrapped. The school then transferred to Gravesend, and on its departure, the pleasure gardens were never reinstated. Aww. Today, the only piece of Vindicatrix to survive is a figurehead that proudly stands in the foyer of the Waterways Museum.
Lots of shoes on the quay.
Yeah, no, they left shoes on the quay when the
rowing club. So obviously, when you go rowing, you don't have your
trainers on.
All your training shoes.
Just before
you hop,
oh,
here we are. There's
some
rowers on the
right. Reminds me of you of
Austin,
does it,
yeah? A bit, yeah.
Did you ever go rowing?
Yeah, and the thing is, I might have enjoyed it. But except we were made to do it, so I hated it. Because I was a teenager, so...
Yeah, principles and... You could have been the Olympics, Sean.
Don't think so. I don't think I wasn't that good.
Well, nowadays, most of the vessels that we encounter on the Canal are leisure craft. These here on the left are typical of the type of boats you see today.
Most of them are awaited
to use A&D Marine's dry dock, which is located in that large brown shed. This dry dock, the third one on the canal, was originally constructed for the maintenance and repair of seven trows and narrowboats. But today this company provides a service for the owners of leisure craft.
There's a barge inside.
Inside what?
Inside the shed. It's a dry shed.
Everything's dry in it.
They don't keep alcohol in it.
So they're
pulling
water. Yeah.
The shop next door.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I could do a bit of rope.
Any old rope.
Practice my rope playing.
Good rope skills.
Yeah, absolutely. My
Yes, we do get the
same. My two half inches.
Bowling,
yeah.
There's a song about those.
What, bowling?
A bowling, a bowling, you cannot tie a bowling. Oh, bowling, bowling, ho!
Bowling? Excellent. As in, with a ball?
No. It's a knot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's spelled as in bow line.
Oh, right.
It's a loop at the end with the...
What's to be washed?
Yeah. It's one that you'd use for mooring, so you put it over a bollard on a quayside.
Yeah. No, this one at the front there, you roll it into, you know, circular pattern.
Well, that's it's probably just filled up.
Like a yo-yo.
Yeah. What's
Well, we're approaching Two Mile Bend.